Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to a 58 Ember production.
Hey, welcome to Here For It. I'm your host, Erica Muller. Each week, we'll be talking all things life, fashion and beauty, personal development, and probably some pop culture along the way as well. Here For It is your weekly space to get grounded, regroup, and be inspired to live your best life. Because really, we're all figuring it out as we go. And I'm so here for it. Hi guys, welcome to season 4 of Here For It. My name is Erica Muller. For anyone new around here, welcome. I'm so happy to have you. And if you're not new around here, I'm so happy to have you back. I've missed you guys. It's been a few months. There's been a lot in the works behind the scenes since we last chatted, but I'm really excited for season 4. I have some really incredible guests and episodes planned and just some fun stuff happening. So I'm happy to be back in front of a mic. Before we jump into the episode today, I want to give you a little hint at a giveaway that's happening. It hasn't been officially announced yet, but it'll be our little secret. 58 Ember, the podcast network that I am on with Here For It, is hosting a giveaway. And if you follow me on Instagram, you saw yesterday I'd posted a picture, my stories about the PR box that they had sent out. They are sending one lucky listener your own PR box. All of the rules will be posted to my Instagram stories tomorrow, Wednesday, November 8th. And on Wednesday, November 15th, the winner will be announced. So if you want to participate, which I highly recommend because there's some good stuff in that PR box, you can head over to my Instagram and check out the rules. Okay, moving on to today's episode. I'm really eager for you all to hear this episode. I have Casey Shea on, and Casey is a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner. She's a certified holistic nutritionist, certified brain health coach, and holistic health practitioner, and she focuses on helping women naturally eliminate anxiety and increase their energy. After we had this conversation, I walked away and I have been implementing so many of the things that she talked about and suggested in this episode. And it's really, really interesting to see the effect that they've had on my life. And I feel like everything's been really positive and productive. And I'm just a lot more mindful about certain things when it comes to nutrition and stress levels and things like that. She also drew a lot of conclusions for me that I had never considered before when it comes to anxiety and how we experience anxiety. And if you've been a listener for a while, you know I've been pretty open about my struggles with anxiety. And a lot of the stuff that she explains is in a way that I've never heard anybody explain anxiety before. And it just made so much sense to me. And so a lot of the solutions that she is sharing and giving also make so much sense to me in order and like as a way to implement change and help you reduce anxiety. So if you struggle with anxiety at all, this episode is definitely for you. But beyond that, we dive into her approach to mental health as a full body approach. And the way she explains that is really interesting. She talks about how your body's response to absorbing nutrition changes depending on your stress levels. So when you're more stressed, your body might be doing things with nutrients differently than you would think. And that was really fascinating to me. She also talks about how our body uses dopamine and the things that we're doing that help and harm the dopamine levels in our body. And that was really, really eye-opening to me. If there's like one thing you take away from this episode, I almost feel like that was the most enlightening to me, where I was like, oh my God, I had no idea my body does like uses dopamine in this way. And she also hits at, if you are somebody who struggles with acid reflux, what you can do about it and why it's often misdiagnosed and mistreated. And I know that acid reflux can be pretty common. So if that is you, you will have some answers to that as well in this episode. But she is just really, really smart. And I'm really, really excited for you to hear this episode. And I think you will walk away with a lot of things you can implement and a lot of new perspective on your overall health. So with that, let's jump into this episode. And here is Casey. So happy to be back, you guys. You speak a lot on neuronutrition. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. Neuronutrition is the lifestyle and dietary inputs that you are putting into your body, into your existence, that are going to modulate the way your nervous system is functioning. So a lot of us experience things like ADD, attention deficit, anxiety, fatigue, lack of concentration, all of these different things we can think of as mental health, but they're actually the health of our nervous system, the function of our nervous system. So neuronutrition is our ability to actually add in these different inputs from the dietary, lifestyle, environmental perspective that are actually going to affect the way our nervous system functions.
Do you think that people get confused between like our nervous system health and mental health?
100%. Our nervous system is kind of like the bridge between our body and our brain. And especially in allopathic medicine, we're used to cutting ourselves off right here at the neck. Mm. It's either a mental health issue, so we're looking at the brain or emotional health, trauma, that type of thing. But we're ignoring our physical body. But the thing is, we are one entity. We can't look at our health separately with this disparity. We are one person. We can't silo out our mind, our mental health, and our physical health. So our nervous system is kind of the bridge between both of those things. Your nervous system is starting in the brain, but it's going to be affecting your physiological health as well as what you perceive from emotional health as well.
I think that makes so much sense. There's so many times where like you feel an emotion and then like your heart is racing or like you have that pit in your stomach. So of course there's got to be a correlation there somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. If you think about it, our language has also developed around this. You get butterflies in your stomach when you're nervous. You're nervous. It's something you're experiencing in your mind, of course. But yeah, your heart's going to race too. You're going to get the butterflies. It's a full body experience. So if anyone listening has ever experienced anxiety, you know it's not just a mental, emotional experience. You're feeling it. You are physically feeling it as well. And that's your nervous system speaking to you. That is showing you that this isn't just solely mental health. Is it mental health? Of course, yes. Talk therapy, traditional approaches to mental health are extremely valid, very important, but I feel like we ignore too much the physiological reactions or side effects of experiencing things like anxiety, which is really just an experience or a symptom of being in your fight or flight state.
That's so interesting. So there's a correlation between obviously what's going on in our brain, like what our thoughts are thinking, that mental aspect, which then can impact our physical body, but can it also be vice versa? Like, is there a correlation between what's happening physically that then affects us mentally?
Absolutely. So I work with a lot of clients to help correct anxiety, and they're already doing, you know, therapies. They've been on the SSRIs. They've done more of the traditional approaches, but they come to me because that is just not working. It's not moving the needle forward for them enough. So what we do is we look at both external environmental stressors and internal stressors. So my focus is on the internal stressors. The external stressors are things like your relationship with your parents, notifications and text messages, your work situation, things that you are actually perceiving as stressful, right? You're like, this is a stressful situation. I'm stressed right now because of this. Those are usually things that are out of your control. So they're external and environmentally focused. But we also have a lot of internal stressors. And those internal stressors can be things as simple as nutrient deficiencies. It can also be underlying stealth infections. Maybe you've had a low-grade bacterial infection for the past 3 years. I see that very, very often when I run my clients' blood work. And those are just going to be two examples. We can also have stagnation of our lymphatic system where we're not moving enough and we're not actually pumping out the drainage of our lymphatic system. So we're having a lot of stagnation of this like immune debris that can give us brain fog, difficulty concentrating. And when we don't have the optimal function of these different components of our physiology, it is stressful. It actually is going to trigger our brain and say, there's something wrong here. There's even evidence that having your bite misaligned can be an internal stressor, right?
Oh my gosh.
You're grinding your teeth. It can be an internal stressor. And what these two types of stressors are doing, these external stressors or environmental stressors, as well as the internal stressors, those are combining. It's an addition equation to determine how much stress resilience do you have in this moment. So maybe you don't have a lot of life stressors and you're wondering why you're anxious all the time. Why is one little thing throwing you over the edge and putting you into a panic attack? Mm-hmm. You may have a lot of nutrient deficiencies. You may have, you know, stagnation of your elimination. Maybe you're not going poop every single day and you're reabsorbing a lot of these things that your body is trying to eliminate back into your bloodstream. That's really stressful for your body. So I work particularly on the internal stressors, running blood work, figuring out what are the nutrient deficiencies that you're lacking, what systems within your physiology are stagnating, what can we optimize from the body perspective that is going to reduce a lot of those stressors on the internal side that's going to make you more resilient to those external stressors that you can't control.
I have been pretty open about my struggles with anxiety. I've dealt with it for a long time. But I find it very uncommon for people to speak on anxiety with this kind of like overarching view. I feel like you hear often like take deep breaths, stop drinking caffeine, meditate. But beyond that, I've never really heard many people speak about a nutrient deficiency could be causing anxiety.
Absolutely. You can have something like an iron deficiency, which is one of the most prevalent deficiencies in the United States for women, that will literally mimic the exact symptoms of a major depression. So our mental health is physical health, is physiological health, is nervous system health. So even something like low B vitamins, especially B12, that could drastically lower your energy to the point where you don't even want to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. And what is so crazy to me, it is one of the most interesting things about the work that I do, is we get more deficient in these nutrients the more stressed we are, the more anxious we are, the more trauma we experience. Because the same nutrients that allow us to switch out of our fight or flight sympathetic state back into our normal optimal functioning, a parasympathetic state, are the same nutrients that are going to be depleted when you are in stress. So we have a different need, different nutrient need based on which state our body is in, based on whatever our body is trying to accomplish at that time. So if we're in our survival state, we actually have an upregulated need for things like magnesium, for things like B12. These are vitamin C. These are really important nutrients that your body needs a larger amount of to maintain stress. Stress is a very, very expensive process physiologically. And if you're chronically stressed, chronically anxious, not getting enough sleep, under eating, fasting, over exercising, all of these things are going to further deplete these nutrients. And you're going to have to replete those nutrients in order to actually be able to get out of that stressed out state to get back to your optimal function. So it's a double-edged sword, because if you are not consciously aware that you're depleting those nutrients by being stressed, then you're just going to dig yourself further and further into a hole, and you're going to have to put in a lot more effort to replete those nutrients. But the issue is, when you are in a fight or flight state, your body has a much harder time digesting and absorbing nutrients. So even if you pop the supplements, even if you eat all the right food, you're eating a perfect diet, if you're in a fight or flight state when you're eating those foods, your nutrient absorption is going to be drastically lowered. Your stomach acid levels, which help you to absorb your B vitamins, your iron, your proteins, and proteins break down into individual amino acids that then build up into our neurotransmitters like serotonin, GABA, dopamine. Those are really important for our mental health and function. But we can't absorb those if we're in our fight or flight state because our stomach acid levels are lowered, because we're deprioritizing digestion in order to survive that situation. We're also stagnating our gallbladder function, which is going to help us to absorb through our bile flow our fatty acids and fat-soluble nutrients, which are really important for stabilizing our hormonal health, helping us to produce hormones in the first place, as well as reducing inflammation that can further exacerbate anxiety.
Okay, I have so many questions. My brain is like, oh my God, wait, like that is wild to me. Okay, so first, if somebody's eating like a perfect diet, they're like, it's balanced. Mm-hmm. I'm getting all these nutrients. I'm eating all these vegetables, protein, whatever. But they're obviously not absorbing it. How do we know? Like, does that show up in a lab? How do you know if you're mm-hmm. not absorbing those?
Yeah, so we can definitely see the deficiencies in the first place. So this is what's really important about getting lab work done, is actually having someone there to interpret it for you. Because if you mm-hmm. just see, oh, I have low B12, you could think, I could just, you know, eat some more foods that contain it. I could take a supplement for that and I'm going to be fine. But the thing is, if you're not able to absorb that, then we're going to have an issue with it. You're just wasting a lot of money, to be honest, and a lot of effort and attention in trying to get that into your diet, into your body. So in that case, that's where we're looking at different factors, different metrics that tell us within your blood panel what your stomach acid levels are. So this is where the knowledge of how you're going to be absorbing these nutrients comes into play, and actually being able to measure these things. So when I'm running labs on my new clients, I'm determining, all right, what are the nutrient deficiencies first and foremost, and why do we have them? Is it because we lack it in our diet? Is there an actual absorption issue within the gut? Do we have inflammation of the gut? Do we have underlying infections in the gut that are inhibiting our ability to absorb this? Or are we chronically in fight or flight to the point where our body is deprioritizing this as an objective? So yes, there's definitely labs we can run, but there's also associated symptoms. So particularly for stomach acid, for everyone listening, if you are curious if you have this, if you have anything like heartburn, indigestion, that is a really, really good sign that you have low stomach acid levels, because we have a sphincter right here in our neck that is basically going to act as like a little flap. And when we have elevated stomach acid levels, the appropriate amount, the flap stays closed. We don't have backsplash. We don't have the heartburn or indigestion. But when the levels are too low, that flap doesn't work. It doesn't have the same signaling that keeps it closed. So we don't feel the backsplash. So when they're too low, we experience heartburn and indigestion. And this is very contrary, actually quite opposite, to what allopathic medicine is saying. They're saying we need to actually lower those levels more, because you have too much, you're experiencing the heartburn. But it's actually this dysfunction of the sphincter that is causing that to happen. So if you are experiencing something like heartburn, it's very probable that you have low absorption of your proteins, of your B vitamins, as well as your iron. And I would 100% ask you to go get those things checked, because all of those are going to make a very, very big impact on your experience of mental health.
So then what is the remedy of that? How can we fix this issue of my stomach acid is not allowing me to absorb what it needs to absorb?
Very simply. The first thing I always like to use is food. As much as we can use the natural option, something that is going to be really sustainable, I'm always going to put that first. So first thing I would try is having something like a lemon or a lime in a little bit of water before you drink or before you eat food. It's going to help to increase those stomach acid levels because of the lemon, the lime juice. We always want to use fresh, not those gross bottled ones. That's okay. Going to help. Another option is apple cider vinegar. Apple cider vinegar diluted in a little bit of water before a meal will help to raise your stomach acid levels as well. But we want to be careful with that, because if you have anything like a bacterial overgrowth like SIBO, any dysbiosis of the gut, the fermentation of the apple cider vinegar can actually cause that to exacerbate the growth of more of the pathogenic bacteria, which can lead to more issues down the road. So we don't necessarily want to just go in first and foremost with apple cider vinegar. But if you know your status of your gut health and you don't really have any imbalances, and you've done that work already, then apple cider vinegar is very, very, very effective. And I personally love that. You also get a lot of blood sugar regulation benefits from it as well. But the safest route to start with is a little bit of like the juice of one lemon, one lime before you have a meal. That will definitely help. You can also have a supplemental form, and a lot of digestive enzymes, they have hydrochloric acid in it. That will help to increase, because you're adding the acid onto acid. But nobody wants to take a pill before they eat every single meal. So I think going for the natural, easy, whole food version of just having lemon or lime juice before you eat is very effective. And it works.
I love that. Such a simple way to go about it, if you can go that way. Back to my 100 questions that I had a second ago. So if you're looking at somebody's labs, and like, for example, I've had my labs run before, and I don't know, I think different doctors use different scales of what's normal. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So we have the allopathic which are going to be the normal perspective. So that's going to be looking at what is basically the average health of the average American. And that's going to be the metrics that are used. So it's kind of like you're good in the green section, you're bad, let's give you a diagnosis and a pill, in the red section. So you either are not healthy or you are healthy. But the thing is, there's a whole range within that of becoming symptomatic and getting to the point of disease or dysfunction within the body. And so that's what I'm trained in, is functional diagnostic nutrition, which is looking at the optimal value. So this is based on someone who has zero symptoms, zero disease whatsoever. And it gives us more of a perspective of when are we trending towards disease, so we can cut it off at the source, cut it off at the root, before we get a whole plethora of downstream symptoms and dysfunctions within the body, so we don't ever get to that disease state. So yeah, we have the allopathic normal approach, and then we have the functional medicine optimal perspective for that.
Okay, that makes sense, because I've always, because I don't know how to read a lab, I just, the doctor calls and they're like, yeah, you're good, you know. But then you see like the little triangle move along that slide, and it seems like the healthy is like a really wide range of numbers. And so back to what you were saying about looking at the outside factors of maybe your levels are low because you're chronically stressed. Would that show up in that lab then as well?
Only if you ran something like a cortisol panel, if you were looking at those actual levels. So no, this isn't something that we have, that I'm aware of, that we have a test that is going to say the absorption issue is because of this. This is where having a true training and being able to understand and interpret these labs is very, very complicated and requires a lot of knowledge of physiology and putting together a lot of disparate pieces, a lot of, you know, disparate, more siloed sections of the body, and seeing how they all interact together. And so that's kind of what functional and holistic medicine does, is looking at you as a complete picture versus, like, if you look at your lab results, it comes back as like renal health of, you know, your white blood cells is your immunity, versus saying, all right, we have this infection. Where is it in the body? Where is this inflammation showing up? What's going on? So it's actually looking at everything as a whole. So for me, the blood work is only one very important piece of the puzzle, but doing a full medical history, doing a trauma analysis, doing a, I have all my clients do a full week of sending me pictures of everything they eat, texting me when they get up. I need to know all of this information. I also need to know their preferences. I need to know what's going on in their day-to-day life to be able to determine, why is this actually happening? So it's very in-depth consultation assessment, in addition to the blood work, to be able to figure out what's going on in this situation, because there are a whole host of reasons why, and it's up to your practitioner to be able to interpret why that is, but that does require a lot of information from the client.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me, because I've never had a doctor, and I don't want to like discredit any doctors out there, because obviously everybody has their own way of working, but I've never had a doctor who has run my labs ask me any sort of, what are you eating on a daily basis? How much exercise are you getting? Things like that, where is that more holistic view? It truly has always just been, let's run a lab. And then I get a phone call, you know, a week later saying like, yeah, it's fine. But it makes so much more sense, again, with what you were saying in the beginning of mental health is connected to our nervous system and vice versa. And everything really is this ecosystem. So it's just interesting. And I wonder how often people end up undiagnosed or misdiagnosed with what's happening because a whole like overall picture isn't being looked at.
For sure. And my grandfather was a doctor. I come from a family of doctors, and they absolutely have their place. But I think what we forget is that an MD is a medical doctor. So they are trained in medicine. They're not trained in nutrition. They're not trained in the aspects that we're talking about. You have functional doctors, you have functional medicine doctors, and that's what they're trained in. So you need to understand, when you go see a practitioner, why you're seeing them, what your objective is, what your preference is, how you want to be analyzed, what you want to get out of it, is going to really be shaped by who you go and see. So a medical doctor is going to look at it from the lens of medicine and prescriptions and a lot more of the invasive approaches. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever, but that's what they're trained in. So that's what they're going to prescribe for you. So I think it's just the awareness of who you're going to see and what you expect to get from them. Like, doctors are not trained in nutrition. They maybe have 6 to 8 hours in their entire medical degree. So I wouldn't go to a doctor for nutrition. I would go to someone who's trained in that. But if I wanted advice on a medication or a surgery, or I need urgent care, I would absolutely go see an MD for that. So I think it's just the knowledge and the awareness of what you want out of a situation to determine who you're going to go see for that.
That is such a valid point. And I don't think, I mean, I've personally never thought about it in that sense of like, what is this mm-hmm. doctor providing in a sense? Because I think you kind of, at least in the way that I grew up, a doctor is like who you go to when you're sick or if something mm-hmm. like doesn't feel right. And so you're kind of assuming that they do have this overall picture of what's happening in your body. But so valid that people are trained in different areas of health and medicine mm-hmm. and functionability and things like that. Such a great point.
Yeah. There's so much complexity to our bodies. Anyone who ever claims to know everything about a human body, you should run far away from them. We yeah. need these different practitioners because we are just so complex. Like there's no way, even at this point, we still know. And there's so much left unknown through all the academic research we've done, even clinical experience. We have to understand that there's always going to be a bias, a preference, certain training influence on that person. So I always say you need a team. You shouldn't just have one person as much as your budget will allow for it. Being able to see different practitioners is really going to give you the most true, accurate, and holistic perspective as to what you can do for your health. I am not fully trained in traditional Chinese medicine or Ayurveda, but there are a lot of these more traditional practices and Eastern medicines that are incredibly, incredibly effective and powerful. But you're not going to go see an MD for that. You're not going to go see a nutritionist for that. You're going to see a specialist for that. So as much as you can, as much as it's allowed for you in your budget for your preferences, I highly recommend having a team to look at all the different components of your body, someone to look at the actual physical structure, your physical fitness and health, look at your blood work, look at your nutrition, someone to help with your mindset, and then someone to actually be there in case something happens to you where you do need more of that emergency care. I think it's truly important to have access to a multitude of different practitioners to make sure you're taking care of yourself in the best way possible.
Totally. I completely agree with that. I think the unfortunate situation is so many people don't have access to mm-hmm. all these different specialists through, you know, their insurance. Like most insurances, I think only cover, you know, more of that like MD level that you were talking yeah. about, where it's like, I know through my insurance, it's not covering acupuncture. It's not going to cover chiropractic. Mm-hmm. It's not going to. And so, I think unfortunately that hinders a lot of people from getting that help that they need. And I don't know if that's something that maybe insurance is like starting to say, like, we will cover more of these things. I think it would be amazing if it was. I don't know if that's something you see at all.
I think it is starting very, very, very slowly. I am hoping and praying that it picks up a little bit, but what we forget very often is that we as the consumer have the power over that. So if it's something that we're asking our insurance for, it's going to happen. We're going to start receiving that type of support and care, but it has to grow in popularity for it to be worth mm-hmm. it to the insurance companies. So it is a really unfortunate situation right now that it is super expensive. Like to truly establish a health team, like I described, it's thousands upon thousands of dollars. I understand that not everyone has access to that, but that's yeah. where it's truly coming down to the perspective of what is the most important to you? Can you afford preventative care, or do you need to just stick with getting your, you know, your annual report done covered by insurance with your MD? But it's having that knowledge and that awareness to help you make those informed decisions versus sitting back and being like, woe is me, this isn't working out for me. But it's truly taking a step back and saying, all right, I know I have limited resources here. Where can I deploy them to get the most benefit for myself based on what my personal goals are?
Totally. I feel like I've always felt like with health, especially, you really have to be your own advocate because you're the one who's like inside 100%. Your own body and knowing what's going on mm-hmm. and if you've noticed correlations. And it's really hard as somebody who I didn't study medicine, I didn't study health and nutrition mm-hmm. and all of these things to figure out, you know, could this be what's happening over here? Could this be what's happening over there? Like, how do I know this is the type of practitioner that I need? So I hope eventually like schooling, you know, high school or something mm-hmm. can start introducing that more to, you know, the next generation. So it's not so much like legwork on our end to be like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think that would be amazing. I think if we could learn about our bodies, especially as women, if we could just have a little bit more opportunity within our health class to learn what our menstrual cycle is, what a period actually is, how to prevent pregnancy through tracking your cycle, how to actually know when you're in these different phases, how to eat according to it. We would, especially when it comes to anxiety, we would manage our stress levels so much better if we just understood the way our stress hormones and our sex hormones are fluctuating at different points in our cycle. So I'm 100% with you there. I think we do need, and it would be amazing if we could actually get to the point of having more of that self-advocacy education within our schools.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of hormones, because this is something I wanted to touch on with you, like at what point do hormones come into play with things like, you know, anxiety symptoms and things like that? I was recently talking with a really good friend of mine, and she had mentioned to me how she's realized that the week before her period, like clockwork, her anxiety is through the roof. It's like the world's ending. The smallest comment feels like, you know, the worst thing you've ever heard. And I started thinking about it, and I've never correlated anxiety with my cycle, but now I'm thinking, oh, this could potentially definitely be happening.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Your cycle. So when we talk about the hormones, when most people speak about hormones within their cycle, they're talking about their sex hormones. But I want you to think about it as we have to first survive. We're humans. If we break it down at the base, we're humans. We have to do one thing first. Hierarchy of needs. We have to survive. Then as animals, as humans, we then want to reproduce. So first within the hierarchy of needs is survival. So the main hormone, stress hormone around that is going to be cortisol. That's going to control that. We have elevated levels of cortisol. We are in fight or flight. We're in our survival state. We're going to be deprioritizing our sex hormones. So we're going to have more of those imbalances, dysfunctions, more likely to experience anxiety and PMS during that late luteal phase. So our stress hormones are going to play a massive role on if we're actually going to experience the peaks of hormones that we're supposed to throughout the fluctuations of our hormonal cycle. So as women, we have two different main phases of our cycle. We have our follicular phase, which is the first day of bleeding up until ovulation. Then we have a little mini phase, which I like to put within follicular because your hormones are peaking. Your things like testosterone, estrogen, human growth hormone, a little bump in your progesterone around day 14 of your cycle. This is typically when you're going to feel really good because of the surge of these hormones. Then after ovulation, we go into our luteal phase, which is the back 2 weeks of our cycle. This is where our testosterone and our estrogen are going to plummet, and our progesterone is going to increase to its peak around the third week of our cycle. And then all of those hormones plummet. And that withdrawal of hormones is what causes our bleed to happen. That's where menses is going to come from. So that's kind of a rough outline of what your cycle looks like. But what's super important is we have the stress hormone cortisol that is going to modulate the effects of progesterone during our luteal phase. So we want our progesterone to peak at around 3 weeks into our cycle. But progesterone is reproduction, right? It's one of our sex hormones. So it's going to be thrown off or deprioritized for survival. So we are very, very susceptible to stress during our luteal phase. Based on just a whole fluctuation of all these different hormones, we are more prone to stress during that time. So that means cortisol is going to be more sensitive. So the littlest thing can make you feel stressed, can make you feel anxious. So cortisol, extra sensitive during that time. If cortisol spikes, it's going to take over progesterone. It's called cortisol stealing, where progesterone, I like to call it your natural Xanax hormone. You feel so calm. You feel so relaxed. You feel amazing when your progesterone reaches that peak at 3 weeks, if it reaches the peak. But if your stress hormones like cortisol are too elevated during that time period in your luteal phase, your progesterone isn't going to peak as much as it wants to. Even if you have enough of the circulating progesterone in your body, it's not going to fit into that same receptor because cortisol is going to steal it. Survival over thriving. That's always how it's going to work in the body. So that is where premenstrual anxiety is going to come from. But also a whole host of all these other PMS symptoms is because you're sensitive to stress, and you're going to have a downstream effect of that, like lessened progesterone, as well as blood sugar dysregulation. So a lot of the cravings that we experience during that time, the crashes, the irritability, a lot of that is actually from the blood sugar dysregulation based on the sensitivity of our cortisol levels. So if we are able to reduce our stress in luteal, reduce our stress overall and work with our cycle for the entire month, we'll notice a drastic reduction in premenstrual anxiety as well as PMS. And I've had a multitude of clients completely eliminate both just by working with their cycle and moving to their natural rhythm.
That's so crazy to think how many like hormonal things are happening that we're just not aware of.
Exactly. This is why we need to be taught this in school. The second you start menstruating, you should have an in-depth class on this is how your body works. The amount of women I work with that have no idea what's going on. They don't even know how their birth control is affecting them. They don't know how it's preventing pregnancy. They don't know the process hormonally of getting pregnant. They don't know when they're fertile and when they're not. I think it's truly important to understand that, but more than being just important for your own awareness is because you have so much more control over your health than we're told. If you lack the knowledge, you lack the even just the basic understanding of how your body functions, you're missing out on feeling amazing. And it's something I always say is that most people have no idea how amazing they're designed to feel. If you are fasting because you're trying to be healthy and you're just chugging your bulletproof coffee a week before your period, you're going to feel horrible. You need to modulate your diet, your lifestyle, your stressors based on these hormonal fluctuations. Men have it easy. They have a 24-hour cycle. They can do the same thing day in, day out. Women, it's a little bit more annoying, a little bit more frustrating because you have to do this upfront work of learning about it. But once you're able to live according to your infradian rhythm, then you actually have a superpower because you can do a lot less during your cycle than someone who has to do it every single day, like a guy, and you're going to notice more rewards. Like one of the craziest things I see is women who come to me working out every day who want to lose weight and lean up. And I'm like, okay, stop working on your luteal phase. Just go for walks. Just listen to your body. Go hard during follicular. And their bodies change drastically just because they're respecting their stress hormones and their sex hormones based on the fluctuations throughout the month.
So interesting. Okay. So then if our hormones are making us more susceptible to stress during that certain time, the luteal phase, I think you said, how do we handle it when it's like an outside stressor? You get an email at work that says, you know, this, and suddenly something's changed. How do you do your best to keep calm?
So this is where a lot of those more stereotypical practices come into play, right? It's do the deep breathing, remove yourself from that situation. I think these are all kind of the stress management tactics that we all know and love. Mm-hmm. That's a great time to use them because, right, we can't control external factors. Mm-hmm. But the more in-depth answer here and what I actually do with my clients, because we can't control the external. So you can use those kind of techniques to calm yourself down and down-regulate in the moment. But what I like to do is build up stress resilience within my clients before any of that happens, because the one thing we can guarantee in life as a human is we're going to get stressed. We're going to get pissed off. We're going to go through life stressors, and we have to realize again, we're animals at the end of the day and we have to survive. So our brain is literally wired to put things through a filter of, is this a direct threat to my survival? And that text message that makes you feel some sort of way, that email from your boss, that TikTok notification is literally a life or death threat to your brain. Your brain is super, super sensitive. And this is because the part of your brain that's actually determining whether something is a stressor or not, is a threat to you or not. Should we turn on fight or flight, or are we good in our parasympathetic state? Can we handle it there? Is the emotional part of our brain. It's the amygdala. So it's all about emotions. It's going to be filtering it through that perspective of, does this scare me? Does this evoke fear? Am I worried about this? So if we are able to have that understanding about ourselves, we can work on preventing the sensitivity to that stress. And that's resilience. And we can actually build that through, I mean, it doesn't even have to be based on your cycle, but it absolutely can in your follicular phase, especially ovulation, when you have more resilience to stress, we can do things called hormetic stressors. And that's going to build up our overall resilience to stress. And we can think of this as like working out is an amazing hormetic stressor that a lot of people are aware of, but you think of working out as a good thing, not a stressor, right? But it actually, when you're lifting a weight, what you're doing is degrading and tearing down muscles. Then your immune system comes in and repairs them and says, we had this stressor. We need to make sure we're building up stronger this time. And that's how you build muscle and build strength. The exact same thing is happening to your nervous system anytime you're using a hormetic stressor. This is heat exposure like saunas, cold exposure like ice baths, going into a frozen lake, things like that. Exposure to elements or using things from the dietary nutrition perspective of adaptogens. This is where a lot of like the adaptogenic mushrooms, nootropics, things like that are gaining popularity right now because they're causing little hormetic stressors on your nervous system, your immune system, your gut health, whatever system in the body. And your body is saying, oh no, we have to be better prepared for this in the future. It's only a micro stressor, so you don't feel it. But your body is saying, this is something that hurt us. Let's make sure it never happens again. It's very jaded. Let's make sure this never happens again. So it builds up stronger. So that is how we're actually able to build up our stress resilience. And one of the main kind of metrics that we're looking at this is something called your vagal tone. Your vagus nerve is going to be your wanderer nerve. It is one of your cranial nerves that is going to innervate into your whole body. And one of the main jobs of your vagus nerve is to switch you out of survival state into parasympathetic state and back and forth and back and forth. And that's what shows how healthy you are, how much resilience you have, is how quickly you're able to experience a stressor and go back into your optimal state of function. And if you experience a stressor in your optimal state of function, how able are you to protect yourself, to survive that situation? To be able to go back and forth really, really quickly is going to be the sign of greater resilience and greater overall health and longevity.
That's so fascinating. I've never thought about like building up stress resilience. You just think it's like a response mechanism and not something that can be strengthened.
Vagal tone. Just like we can tone our muscles, we can tone that nerve to have better flexibility. And that's one of the most important things in the body is any stagnation is basically going to lead to death. We're kind of like a shark. If we stop moving forward, we are going to die. So if anything faltered, if anything stagnated too much in the body, we would cease to exist. We'd get into that state of like disease and then it would go from there. So we want flexibility. We want to be reactionary. We want to be really quick within, this is the situation. This is how we respond in the body. All right, it's neutralized, go back. And that flexibility gives us so much resilience. And that's one of the number one things my clients tell me is, I'm like, all right, how's your stress? Are you experiencing anxiety lately on their check-ins? And they'll tell me, you know what? There's a lot of stress in my life because they can't control that. It's external, but it's not affecting me like it used to. Like, I don't feel as exhausted. I bounce back really quickly. And that's a testament to stress resilience. It's we are never going to be able to control those external factors, but you can control yourself. You can control the different inputs that you put in at different times to be able to build up your resilience to stress. There's so many people out there that can just handle whatever that comes their way. They just have stress resilience versus the people who don't, especially someone who's had anxiety or they've had, you know, panic attacks are going even further. They've had a lot of traumatic experiences in their life. That means their vagal tone is so, so, so low that you give them a side eye and they're freaking out.
Yeah.
It's that resilience. And that's all based on the burden, the stressors on our nervous system at that time. So to increase our stress resilience, we have to decrease the burdens on our nervous system, the different stressors in our life.
I love that. It also kind of reminds me in a way that a couple years ago, I recognized in myself saying like, oh, my anxiety, I have anxiety and like claiming it. And one day I just kind of had an epiphany where I was like, I don't really want this to be a personality trait. Like, I don't want this to be me. And so I've been really cognizant over the past couple of years of saying like, I felt anxious or I'm feeling anxiety and not really claiming it. And I think that has also helped in that maybe not having ownership over this is something that I experience 24/7.
100%. That's one of the first things I do with my clients who come to me for anxiety is stop owning it. Why are you creating that reality for yourself? We think of manifestation as something that's super spiritual, but it's actually real. It's physiological. Yeah. It's your neurological health, right? Of your brain is going to do whatever it can possible to make something true, right? If you think about the placebo effect, it's the number one most effective treatment that's ever been studied in the entire world. In all of history is the placebo effect. It's your brain saying, make this happen. And so your body follows that command. That's just the essence of how your nervous system works. So Yeah, in those cases, if you're saying I'm anxious, you truly have like wired that into your identity. Your brain is going to say, let's make this true. To something that maybe wouldn't have made you anxious before, your body's going to say, this is how we desire to respond. Or further than that, if we take away almost the emotional side of it, this is how we are programmed. This is how we are conditioned to respond to this situation, is an increase of stress hormones and subsequent anxiety. So that's the, one of the greatest things, one of the greatest first steps that you can take is delete that ownership. It's not yours to own. That's selfish of you. Stop it. It's not yours. Anxiety is an experience. It is a symptom of being in fight or flight. You can't own an experience. You are not anxious. It's just something that you have experienced in a certain moment.
Absolutely. And I truly, like, I swear, ever since I started doing that, the frequency in which I experience anxiety has lessened significantly.
I love that. It's amazing. It's just a testament to how powerful our brains are, how powerful we are, and how much control we do have over our health.
Absolutely. So I wanted to ask you like one final question. If somebody is listening and they're like, I really relate to this, I feel like I'm experiencing some of these things, I think I'm chronically stressed or anxious or whatever, what are some lifestyle factors you think somebody could implement to help them regulate those things?
So the, one of the first things I would say, make sure you're sleeping. Nothing in your body is going to work unless you are able to get enough sleep, to truly get enough rest. The next thing I would say is take some time away from technology. I know how hard this is, especially whenever you're anxious, you have a dopamine attachment, you have a dopamine cortisol addiction most likely. And it almost feels good to be in those numbing states, to be in a disassociative distraction state, because you're escaping some of that pain of experiencing anxiety, but it is making the situation much, much worse. So as much as you can get into a state of boredom, boredom is medicine for anxiety. Boredom is medicine for repleting our dopamine levels. It is medicine for lowering our cortisol levels. Bonus points if you can be outside in nature, grounding bare feet on the earth, the dirt, the grass, the sand, the ocean, whatever you need. That is going to make more of a difference than I could even tell you. And it's the answer that no one wants to hear, because it is really hard, because it's truly an addiction. Addiction of cortisol, a dopamine, which is definitely a player in addiction, but it's that numbing. So as much as we can escape from technology, from just being completely immersed in something that is outside of our physical body, it's the same thing as getting present, right? Grounding, getting present, coming back into our body. As much as we can do that, that's going to be really, really helpful. So is making a decision of when you're going to wake up in the morning. This is something that Andrew Huberman talks about all the time, is your morning routine and how effective it is at regulating your circadian rhythm. But one thing we don't think about enough is our circadian rhythm, one of the main hormones that control our sleep-wake cycle, cortisol. Cortisol is one of our main stress hormones, but it's also our wake hormone. And we need cortisol to be elevated first thing in the morning. So we don't want to lower cortisol levels, as I see everyone on the internet talking about right now. We want to regulate based on our circadian rhythm. We want them to be elevated enough to wake us up in the morning and give us enough energy to sustain us throughout the day. And then we want it to shut down at night when our melatonin rises. So getting up, deciding on a time to wake up, and getting out of bed at that moment, use that dopamine boost to reinforce this cortisol pattern of, I said I would get up, I'm going to do it, I did it, go me. Than doing something like morning movement. It's going to help to regulate the cortisol. If you wake up anxious, especially if you wake up 4:35 a.m. anxious, you want to throw up, you feel really nauseous, upset to your stomach, that's really normal with really dysregulated cortisol from anxiety, but that's messing with your sleep-wake cycle. You probably struggle with insomnia or waking up at different odd points in the night as well. So for that, getting a really solid morning routine where you're waking up, getting that dopamine success hit of, I got up at the time I said I would, and you're getting up and you are doing some sort of movement to regulate out your cortisol, to move through it. If you can do it outside and get sun exposure, that's also going to be a really important input to your brain through the angular solar rays of the sun actually rising. Your brain's going to take that input and say, this is the time of day it is based on the season. This is how much our cortisol level should be for the day. And just doing those three things in the morning could literally take you 10 minutes, 7 minutes, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, depending on how efficient you want to be. And it will change your energy levels, change your appetite, your cravings. It'll give you a whole host of benefits, but it is really going to regulate out your cortisol levels, which is going to give you a lot more balanced energy and prevent a lot of those spikes and dips that are going to cause anxiety later in the day. So I would say those are more of the like routine lifestyle things that I would touch on first. Those are mm-hmm. bare basics. If you can do nothing else for your health, those will benefit you greatly.
I love that. Can I just ask a question for clarification on the dopamine? Because you'd mm-hmm. mentioned the dopamine hit that you're getting from scrolling TikTok is bad, mm-hmm. but the dopamine you get from getting out of bed first thing in the morning is good. Why is that?
So I want you to think about it. When you get up out of bed in the morning, you are doing like one activity, mm-hmm. right? It's taking up a little bit more of your attention span because it's taking more time. All right, I got up, I did this thing. All right, I'm celebrating myself, even though I don't want to get out of bed. I did it. It's one activity. It's one instance. It's one hit versus how quickly do you scroll through TikTok? Doom, doom, hit. And let's talk about dopamine really quickly.
Yeah.
We have an amount of dopamine we can use every single day. It's like this much, right? Let's just say arbitrarily, it's this much dopamine. Then we have a reservoir. We are not supposed to dip into this reservoir. This reservoir is if we, you know, get lost in the jungle and there's a tiger chasing us and we need to be self-motivated. We need to dip into that reservoir to survive in that moment. It's going to work complementary to our fight or flight system. We need that reservoir to always be there. But the thing is, if we deplete into our reservoir, as soon as we achieve that task, all right, the tiger's not chasing us anymore. We're alive. You crash. Your energy is gone, wiped. You are faded. You are just stuck there. You can't do anything else for the day.
Yeah.
And you have to recover. You have to replete that reservoir. So as you're scrolling on TikTok, you're depleting. For sure, you're running through your daily allotment and you're depleting. And the thing is, you're probably not resting enough at night to replete that. You're probably not eating enough of the right foods, or you're in fight or flight where you're not absorbing enough of the tyrosine from your protein to build up into your dopamine levels. So you're just staying in this depleted state and you wonder why you feel so exhausted and so depleted and you don't want to go do anything. You lack motivation because you're in such a depleted state because you've used a lot of dopamine hits throughout the day. So you're in a depleted state. So dopamine is amazing to utilize as a tool when we are in our daily allotment. But when we're in our reservoir, we can really hurt ourselves. And the further we stay in this reservoir, the longer we stay there, the longer it's going to take for us to replete that. So if you're chronically scrolling TikTok, especially until you fall asleep at night, the first thing you do is check your phone in the morning.
Yeah.
You're not really giving yourself enough time to replete that reservoir. So you are going to feel pretty fatigued, pretty lethargic, and it's going to be hard for you to concentrate and get your work done. It's going to be hard for you to want to get up and do anything, to leave your house, to get up off the couch. So that's why I say getting off of technology is incredibly powerful for helping you to actually replete all of your neurotransmitter levels, not just your dopamine levels, but also to regulate out your cortisol, your stress hormones, to be able to get your GABA where it needs to be, which is what I call another Xanax hormone in the body, your neurotransmitter. It helps to keep everything calm. It's your main inhibitory neurotransmitter. So those excitatory stress hormones, it can help to blunt them and to calm them down. So if you want the whole host of neurological benefits, taking away things like TikTok and social media just temporarily to replete those levels is going to be very, very powerful.
That is fascinating. Thank you for sharing.
You are so welcome. I'm very passionate about dopamine because whenever you can use it appropriately and you don't overburden yourself and dip into that reservoir, you do not lack motivation ever. You can get yourself up and do anything, even if you don't want to do it. So it's a very powerful tool. Like I said, the more you know about your body, the more self-awareness, the more autonomy you have over your health, the more you can do. You can truly feel like a superhuman every single day.
I love that. Thank you so much for everything you shared in this episode. I hope everybody loves it because I found this completely fascinating and just so enlightening. Please let everybody know where they can find you, where they can connect with you, anything you'd like to share.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the neuronutritionist on both TikTok and Instagram. You can interact with me there. I'd love to meet you, chat with you, and thank you for listening and thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
This has been a 58 Ember production. For more shows, please visit the 58 Ember channel, 58ember.com, or find us at 58 Ember Media on socials.